Okay, welcome to hour two of the weekly reverse speech show. And in this hour, I'm going to bring to the microphone reverse speech analyst Kathleen Hawkins, who is also a successful author, who's written her own novel about reverse speech. We'll talk to more about that before. We'll talk more about that as the show goes on. We've had Kathleen on the show before, but it was almost a year ago, so we're certainly time to bring her back. Kathleen, welcome to the show.
Thank you. It's so much fun to be back. It was about 10 months ago was the last interview.
10 months ago. Well, there you go. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So tell me a little bit about, you know, you're a reverse speech analyst. You were trained in the 1994 analyst class, if I recall correctly.
It was a long time ago. Yeah. Long time ago. Well, before I learned about reverse speech and met you, I was the author of 7 books so far, with 6 more written and ready for their close-ups. I have the completed books in the pipeline, so to speak, ready to be edited and polished and published. Oh. I was also a time management columnist for Success Magazine for several years and a professional speaker. I taught speed reading throughout the United States, and one of my books, Speed Reading Made Easy, is based on the course that I taught.
All right.
And my website, if people want to pop over there later on, is winningspirit.com.
Winningspirit.com. Go and visit her site. Yes.
So After the interview.
After the interview. So how did you learn speed reading, and how do you teach it?
Oh, my goodness. How did I learn it? I was studying for my second master's degree, and I had so much reading to do, and I wished that I had learned speed reading when I was in elementary school. It would have been so helpful. And so I took a course, and I thought, you know, this is fabulous. And then I took several more courses, and I studied what worked, and then I developed my own technique, and I started teaching it, and it was very, very popular.
Right. And are you still doing that? I mean, I remember when you used to go off on these lecture tours teaching. So is that something you're still doing?
Not so much right now. I used to do tours of the country. I would teach in 25 cities.
Oh, wow.
You know, one after the other. I'd teach a class in one city on Monday and one city on Tuesday. And then I'd take Wednesday off, and then I'd teach in 2 more cities. And I would do that until I taught about 25 classes. Then I'd come home and rest for a month and do my writing. And then I'd go out on the road again, and I would go on about 3 of these tours a year.
Oh, right.
And then it was very exciting. I worked in Silicon Valley. You know, people say, well, speed reading is great for novels, but can you speed read technical material? Well, yes, you can. In fact, most of my business was in Silicon Valley with computer programmers and computer experts and semiconductor people. And I also taught in universities. And then in 2008, when the economy collapsed, all of my clients, even though my course was the most popular one in many of the companies, one of the companies had me come back 4 times a year for 15 years. That's how much they liked the course. But everybody just kind of withdrew and regrouped. And then after that, I thought, well, I'm just going to take this time to finish all these books that I've started writing. And during that time, classes started going to online courses.
Oh, yes, right. That's
and it. I didn't have an online course, but I did have I do have a book based on my very popular course, and that's Speed Reading Made Easy. So I've just been working on my books and feeling pretty good about things, although being a writer is challenging, as I think you know.
Yes, I do, very much so.
But, you know, I usually am working on several books at a time, and I'll put one away for, you know, a few months or even a couple years while I work on another one. And so it takes longer to get everybody over the finish line.
Right, right.
And then suddenly I'll have one, two, three books published fairly close together, and everyone will go, oh, she's an overnight success. But not really.
They don't see all the hard hours writing and you sit at your desk. Yeah.
Oh, I know, I know. But then, go on.
Oh, I'm starting my next book when I get back from my trip. It's going to be called The Small Still Voice, and it'll go into some of the more spiritual aspects of reverse speech.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Fantastic. Well, you know, I'm reading It's Only a Metaphor, and I am fascinated by it.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, that's in the
compelling.
That's in the editors now. And,
okay.
That will be out hopefully by the end of the year. That's what the plan is.
Oh, okay. I thought that maybe it was already out.
Well, it's out as an ebook form, yes, but I'm
I'm
bringing it out in print version. So.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Oh, good. Good. Yeah. It's so compelling, and it's suspenseful, it's informative. It's just really an enjoyable read, and it's hard for me to speed read because there's so many different levels, you know.
Oh,
and,
there is. Yeah, the book's written on many levels.
Yes, yes, and very captivating.
Oh, book. Thank you. Yes. Yeah, well, we'll talk more about that as we go on. So let me see. When we first met, I met you in my first trip to America in 89.
Yes. Wow.
Yeah. That's,
89.
That's 28 years ago. Wow.
Wow. Uh-huh.
Yeah. Uh-huh. And you contacted me through a magazine article I had published in Anchor Point magazine, which is an NLP magazine.
So, mm-hmm.
Yeah. And you wrote to
me. I remember I sent you a letter because in those days I didn't have email.
No, we didn't even know what email was back then.
I don't think anybody had email in 1989 or whatever.
No.
And so I contacted you in Australia. I wrote you a letter, and what I was thinking was, you know, I could maybe get an article out of this. I could interview you for an article, and because when I read that article in Anchor Point, I thought, this is fascinating. And, you know, I'm so interested in psychology and philosophy and words.
Right.
And I just wanted to talk to you a little bit more. And you called on something called the telephone, which we also had in those days. We had landlines.
That's right.
And you told me that you just happened to be moving to Dallas, which is the area where I live.
That's right. Yes, yes. It was quite a synchronistic of circumstances, wasn't it, that made all that happen?
Yes.
Yeah.
I figured it was destiny or fate or something, yeah. The equivalent of.
Yeah. And then I was in Dallas for 5 years before I moved to San Diego.
And you had classes out here at the house.
Yeah, that was great. We got a marvelous property and a beautiful surrounding. So,
yes, it's wonderful. And this house is a big house overlooking a lake. It's sitting on a ridge.
Uh-huh.
It was a perfect place for reverse speech to debut.
That was a 94 class, that was, 1994.
Was it?
Yes,
wow.
I remember that.
And I know you wanted some help on the book, you know,
mm-hmm.
on reverse speech, hidden messages, and human communication.
Mm-hmm.
I have it right here, the copyright 1991.
There we go. Right.
So it was before. It was earlier than that.
Yes.
And so I was so honored, you know, when you shared all of your research and your earlier book that you wrote with me. And that telephone just rang.
That's okay. I thought it was
and so
Wi-Fi.
You shared your research with me in an earlier book that you wrote, and I helped edit it and pull it all together and found a publisher for it.
Yes, you did. You did a marvelous job. Now, you wrote something in an email to me this morning that I didn't know about the first book. You said the FBI bought 21 copies?
Yes.
I didn't know that.
I know, and I didn't mention that on our last interview, but that's really important.
Very important, yes.
What happened was, I'm just trying to get the timeline here. We had classes, you held classes here at the house, and one of the homework projects that we were doing at practice was analyzing reverse speech in many different kinds of recordings. And one of the other students who was in the class with me at the time was given a tape. The police in another state gave him a tape because they knew what he was doing. And they said, you know, would you analyze this? It's an interrogation and interview with a suspect. Now, the other student, I'm not going to name him.
Okay.
Because, you know, part of this story is his story to tell. But I don't think he's going to be telling it. And I will share in a little while why he won't be talking about it.
Oh.
Sounds kind of ominous,
it
huh?
It does, yeah.
So anyway, this other student and I listened to these tapes, and he was really talented in finding reversals. So he found the reversals. I transcribed the tapes, and we were astonished at what we found. Just the in reverse, and let me see, I'm going to read some here.
Yeah.
The main suspect in reverse said, "The dead swim. Sin is shallow. Ill water, ill water. I killed the woman. I give up."
Wow.
Now, that sounds to me like a confession.
Yeah, it does.
And it was just eerie as could be. And so while we were sitting there, this other student and I, we were sitting there with these findings thinking, oh, my gosh. I met with him again, and he said, I got a call from the police department, and the police said that the FBI contacted them and told us, the other student and me, to stop what we were doing, to stop our investigation.
Whoa.
And stop using reverse speech in the investigation.
Whoa.
And,
I didn't know this. This is news to me. Oh, I didn't. Wow. Okay.
And I thought, why? Because look at this. It looks like a confession. And I want to say that I think that reverse speech indicates guilt or innocence, suggests guilt or innocence, points to guilt or innocence,
yes,
but might not definitively say.
Well, no. It's like the lie detector, you know, it's a good information gathering tool, but
yeah. So I was thinking, you know, I knew that the FBI knew about reverse speech because they bought 21 copies of reverse speech hidden messages when it came out. That's what the publisher told me.
Wow.
So 21 people there, at least, were studying it and passing the book around. And then they were also brought in on this missing persons case in another state. And so that's how they knew that we were involved in doing analysis on it. And they told the police to tell us to stop.
Wow.
And so this other student told me, I threw the tapes away. Now, at the time, the tapes were audio cassette tapes. You know, they weren't MP3 files or anything like that. So there was no way to get those tapes back.
Wow.
And I save everything, and I would have saved those tapes just because. But so then I thought I was sitting there with this transcript and I thought, well, what do I do with this? This is so fascinating. But they told me to stop what I was doing. So what I did was I fictionalized the story around the real tapes, the real findings.
Okay.
And that's how The Insiders was born. The book, The Insiders, incorporates the actual findings on this missing persons case with a suspect's apparent confession. And yet the backstory is totally fictionalized.
Right.
So basically, I was too afraid to do anything more with it, you know, because when the FBI tells you to stop something.
Yeah, well, they intimidated, they threatened me after I...
did they?
Oh, yeah, after I worked with them with on David Koresh, they asked me to analyze Koresh, and so I did, and I wrote a report and submitted it to them. Then they rang me a couple of weeks later and basically told me to shut up, don't talk to the... Well, I had an article published in the Dallas paper about it, about my work, which is on the website, by the way. If you go to reversespeech.com, search for David Koresh, you can see the article there. Mm-hmm. And they basically said it would be very embarrassing if what was the words he used? It would be very embarrassing if it was revealed in Congress that we used reverse speech in the David Koresh case and didn't follow through with your findings. That was essentially what they said. And we advise you to be quiet, don't talk to the press, or we'll crush you. That's what they said.
Ooh, I know. Crush.
Crush.
That's a little harsh. Crush.
I remember the word crush, and I was shocked. I was
oh my gosh.
Dumbfounded.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
Well, you know, I thought, yeah, so they didn't want you to talk about it because it would embarrass them. What I was thinking was, you know, they, and this may be another reason they didn't want us to talk about it, was the FBI operates on a need-to-know basis, and reverse speech reveals way too much. And it's like people can know an awful lot, maybe more than they should know. It reveals everyone's thoughts and agendas, including suspects and the investigators.
That's
so
right.
If the investigators had any secrets... You know, so
they're all going to come out. Here they are.
So this case that the other student and I worked on, I was revisiting the case recently. This case goes back like 26 years that these people, it was more than one person, more than one woman disappeared. I was going through the archives. It's a real cold case. And I read that the police received a tip that the bodies were in water.
Right.
And I thought, hey, you know, our speech reversals suggested sin is shallow, ill water.
That's right.
The speech reversals suggested that the bodies were in water. So I thought, maybe the other student shared our findings with the police before he threw the tapes away. And that was the tip that they got to look in water.
Wow.
So it took me a few days to find him because he wasn't at his old job. I mean, it was 26 years ago. And I left a message for him and he called back and I said, did you tell the police what we found? You know, that the bodies were in water, because I read in this article that they dragged a lot of the waterways in the area. Now, dragging them, what they do is they use some sort of grappling hooks and they just drag it behind a boat. I said, were you the one that gave the police the tip and told them what we found? And he said, and this is so chilling, he said, I don't remember. Apparently, he was in an accident that wiped out part of his memory.
Wow.
Now, there wasn't any conspiracy. I don't think there was any conspiracy to try to silence him, because the accident he had was years later, years after we worked on these tapes. He told me he was just doing some work around his house, and he had a bad injury, which affected his memory.
Oh, wow.
And I don't want to share that, what
No, no,
it
that's fine.
was,
No,
because
that's fine.
that's personal with him. And
Sure.
but that's why I'm thinking he's will never talk about those days because
No.
he won't remember
Well,
them.
there was so much interest in reverse speech from law enforcement back in those early days. I mean, I did about a half a dozen cases for the Richardson Police in Dallas, which I'm sure you remember. And
So what happened there?
I had great success. I mean, one case revealed where the crime took place. It was near a transmission tower, and gee, I'll have to try and pull those reversals up. They're probably,
Yeah, I think they're in your book.
yeah,
It's only a metaphor.
I think they are, yeah.
Yeah.
And I just had confirmed this year, from Scott Jones, who set up my original lectures in Washington, D.C., something I'd always suspected that the CIA were there. And he confirmed that to me in an e email to me earlier on in the year.
The CIA were where?
At my lectures in Washington, D.C. You remember
Oh.
the 4-day workshop I gave in Washington, D.C.?
Yes.
Yeah. I know the FBI were there. I know the Secret Service were there. I know Naval Intelligence were there. There were
Oh
several
my
people who
gosh.
never identified themselves. And anyway, Scott Jones just confirmed with me this year that the CIA were there. So.
So they didn't identify themselves at the
No.
time?
No, they
I
didn't.
guess not. Well, you know, when you had classes here, there was a young man from a detective agency. You might remember this.
I remember his name
And
too.
he told you the name of it, the detective agency and all that. And then after the classes were over, I forget how long the course was, but when it was all over, you said there is no such and such detective agency. So we never knew who that guy
I
was.
know, never did.
But I liked him. I mean, we had lunch together and he came to every class in the house and he was so pleasant, but we didn't know who he was, you know, for real.
Well, I had someone like that in my class in San Diego. Anyway, look, we have to go to our top of the hour break. So,
Okay.
well, bottom of the hour break, whichever. I get confused. So, don't touch that keyboard, folks. My guest is Kathleen Hawkins, and we will be back right after this.
Do you struggle with your weight? Are you frustrated or discouraged? Think you've tried everything to lose weight? Tired of weight loss products that promise results and don't deliver? There are 12 main reasons why you struggle with excess weight and have a difficult time losing it. From overeating to hormonal imbalances, an underactive thyroid, even sleep problems, and even dieting itself. The truth is, the 12 causes of weight loss problems are all addressed by one product, Royal Velvet. You, yes you, can join the scores of Rinse listeners who have stopped the madness and no longer struggle with weight issues. Maybe you've heard them talk with Jeff about their amazing transformations on his show. Simply go to RoyalVelvetNow.com, click on the weight loss section, and learn the truth about the real reason obesity is a deadly epidemic that you can avoid. Then click on the Rinse icon in the upper right-hand corner, and you will be on your way to a healthier, slimmer, more youthful you. RoyalVelvetNow.com. Your life will never be the same.
If you've been listening to this program for any length of time, you'll know that Fukushima, the greatest calamity in history, has now, as I've been warning since 3/11, killed off virtually the whole North Pacific Ocean and especially up and down the entire West Coast. The radiation is migrating inland and is moving across the entire country. There's only one proven defender to radiation exposure, the brilliant Chernobyl-proven discovery of Dr. Michael Kuryak, which combines the four most potent and powerful algaes on the planet, imported to the U.S. and known as Bio Superfood. I've taken Bio Superfood every day for several years now and want you to do the same for your sake and the health and safety of your family and loved ones. Take the banner at the top of Rents.com and prepare to learn how to save your life.
All right, welcome to the final segment of the Weekly Reverse Speech Show. My guest this hour is author and reverse speech analyst Kathleen Hawken, and we're having some interesting discussions about some of the early days of reverse speech with interest from law enforcement. And, so what was I saying? Yes, so the CIA were confirmed to be at the lectures. So, interesting. So,
Wow. Well, you know, I personally found using reverse speech in police investigations too problematic. Maybe you have too.
Yes,
I don't
I
know.
Have.
But,
yes,
like, when the FBI says stop it, I go, oh, okay.
Well, I was just met with really nasty attitudes most of the time, you know, bullying.
Oh, yeah.
Intimidation. I think, what are you doing this for? I'm just an Aussie. I'm bringing you a new technology. Why are you doing all this crazy stuff, you know?
They just told me stop it, and I obeyed.
Yeah, I know.
So, you know, I'm too paranoid to use it in police work, and I figure if the investigators themselves, the CIA and the FBI and the police, want to learn how to do it and use it in their work, more power to them. And they might even be using it, I don't know. So I'm not going to pursue the case from years ago. It's a cold case. It was a long time ago. The bad guy's still out there, and reversal analysis probably wouldn't be admissible in court, you know, like lie detectors. Uh-huh. Although lie detector evidence is admissible in some court, in some states, only under certain circumstances. So I thought, you know, this is just too complicated for me. So I turned my interest to, this is a favorite of yours,
okay.
Metaphors.
Yay!
Metaphors.
And it's a favorite of mine. Yes.
And I just, like I said earlier, I've been reading your autobiography. It's only a metaphor, and it is so much fun. It's full of suspense. And what you do is you take the readers on a journey of discovery,
yeah,
the same
right.
journey you went on when you were learning about reverse speech.
Yeah.
So in doing that, they learn about reverse speech.
That's right. Yep.
And
yep, that's what I thought. The best way for them to learn about it is follow my journey, you know. So, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, and it also says something about your character and your perseverance and your creativity and how smart you are, too. We get insights into all of that. So it's really an inside look. And given the subject, you know, reverse speech, which reveals so much, I find that you're very accessible in your writing. You know, you say, here's what worked really well, here's what didn't work as well, and here's what I found. And, you know, you really seem to be very open. Mm. And I like that in a writer.
Oh, thank you.
But
yeah.
I was going to say something more about metaphors. You know, as a writer and a poet, I use metaphors a lot, and I find what the words that come to my mind for metaphors are smooth and delicious, which is a metaphor. You know, they say one thing is another. They go deep into the psyche where the
uh-huh.
feelings are.
Uh-huh.
And that feels true to me. And whenever I read material with metaphors in it, I just seem to calm down. Unless it's a jarring metaphor or something like that. But here's what I thought you might find interesting. When I was going to school in San Francisco, I participated in a brainwave experiment.
Oh, yeah.
And what they wanted to find out was what people's brainwaves do when they are reading poetry with a lot of metaphors in it.
Oh, interesting.
As opposed to when they're reading factual or scientific material. So they hooked me up, you know, put all those things on my head, and then they had me read poetry. to myself, read silently, and then they had me read some scientific factual material, and they studied my brainwaves, and they did this with a lot of people. And they came to the conclusion that when people are reading poetry and metaphors, there's more alpha brainwaves, which indicates a relaxed mental state. And when we're reading factual and scientific material, there's more beta brainwaves. So I thought that was interesting because, like I said, I feel relaxed a lot when I read some metaphors. I have a couple here if I could share.
Please. Absolutely. Yes.
Well, there's one metaphor I really liked. I don't know who said it, but it says, love is a nutrient.
Oh, that's a good metaphor.
See, it makes you go, oh, wow. That's the reaction. Yes, love is a nutrient. Now, we could say love is good for us. Okay, most people know that. But when you say love is a nutrient, what we're saying is love feeds us, sustains us, helps us grow, keeps us healthy. Now, a simile says love is like a nutrient, which isn't quite as nice. I think metaphors are a lot stronger and more effective. And so Emily Dickinson, I found a couple that she wrote that I just love. The first one is, dying is a wild night and a new road.
Oh.
Isn't that nice? Dying is a wild night and a new road.
Wow.
Wow. I know. I'm thinking, whoa, that's powerful. Yeah. She also said, and this is amusing, I like this, I hope you love birds too. It's economical. It saves going to heaven.
It saves going to heaven?
Yeah, it's like birds are just heavenly, and being in the presence of a bird, you don't even need to go to heaven because you've got a painted bunting and a cardinal and all that. And then one last one that she said, she said so many. She said, my friends are my estate. Now, friends are the true net worth of a person because a person's estate is their net worth. Right. And she says, my friends are my estate.
Well, that's quite a powerful statement too. Wow. Yeah.
And then some other more common metaphors, the elephant in the room. Of course, there's not an elephant in the room.
No.
But what they mean is the big subject in the room that everybody's avoiding.
Yep, that's right. Yep.
The heart of darkness. The third rail in the subway, if you touch the third rail, you're a goner.
Oh, yeah.
And then for the scientists, and I've known a scientist or two that they're not so excited about metaphors, but here's one for them. The brain is a computer.
Oh, okay.
So, you know, they use metaphors in science, too.
Well, yeah. And the brain is a computer, too. I agree with that.
Yep. Yeah. So I've been really thoroughly enjoying reading It's Only a Metaphor. And the way you break it down, you know, into first level, which are the literal metaphors, second level, which are the operational, and the third levels are the structural metaphors. Nice.
Yeah, I still use those definitions in my classes, teaching them. Yep. That's the mainstay, the foundation stone of the analyst course.
Yeah, and like the first level literal ones tend to reflect the conscious level of mind. So if someone were to say in reverse, I shot him, that might mean I killed him. Second level operational, if someone said, I shot him, it might mean I energized him.
Yes.
Because that's more of the metaphor. And then the third level, which I think are favorites of yours, are the archetypal,
that's right,
the structural metaphors. And you do a lot of work with that in the meta walks, don't you?
Yeah, look, if people only had any idea of the work I do working with clients. I mean, I've got a client, my current client loads about 30. So which means I'm doing at least 30 megawatts a week, you know.
So, oh, my goodness.
Yeah, I mean, gee, what's the time now? It's about 2 o'clock, and I've done 3 this morning so far. So.
Oh, my gosh. Well, do you go into an altered state when you do that with other people as well as
Yes, I do, but it's just automatic. I don't have to do anything to get there. I just automatically go there, you know. So, and you can feel them easier that way. You get a good sense whether the megawatt's working, you know. I teach my students to surround your client with your whirlwind. So imagine your energy reaching out across the miles surrounding the person that you're talking to. And that brings them.
I like that. I'm going into an altered state right now. more, do more, say more.
Yeah. I'm pretty good at that sort of stuff. I don't talk about it much on my radio shows. I don't know why. It's 90% of all my work with reverse speech, but it's the part that gets the least coverage, you know. Yeah, I've got some amazing success stories. I'm working with a guy now who came to me 6 months ago with a very severe cough and a twitch, a very bad twitch that he'd had. He'd twitch, you know, 3 or 4 times a minute. It was that bad.
It's like Tourette's syndrome or something like that.
It wasn't Tourette's, but it was like Tourette's. Mm-hmm. Yes. And so I did an initial tape with him because I said to him, look, I don't know how, you know, if psychological issues I can work with, physical issues, there's got to be a psychological cause for it. So I did a little tape with him, a little taster session, 15-minute taster session. I recorded him. I said, okay, if we do this metaphor restructuring, is it going to work for you? You know, the reversals came back and said, yes, it will. So I told him, I said, look, let's go ahead and do it. Reversals say we can make a difference. Anyway, 6 months later, we've finished 3 rounds of session work, and his cough and his twitch have practically completely vanished. This whole guy's life has changed and transformed.
I bet you got repeat business from him.
I'm going to ask him for a testimonial later on here. He's actually got a point with him later on today. I'm going to ask for a testimonial. So that's great. I just get such amazing success working with people. You know, I work a lot with business and success issues, people who've got continual blocks for making money or running their business successfully, and just get amazing shifts. Whole lives changed and turned around.
You know, you said something in It's Only a Metaphor that I was very curious about. You said, and maybe you could expand on that right now if you wanted to. You said that sometimes metaphors appear in a person's conscious world or external world.
Yeah, well, you would never know that unless you had the reverse speech to work with, of course, you know. But
Well, you know, what I'm thinking is people in the self-growth fields and self-growth professions talk about manifesting our beliefs. Mm, they use the word manifesting. And they talk about how our external reality is sometimes an out-picturing of our inner thoughts.
Exactly.
And that seems kind of like what you're saying.
Yeah, you just hit the magic on the head. That's exactly – yeah, I say it all the time. The world in which we live is a reflection of the unconscious mind. It literally is a mirror reflection of each other. And so one of the things I'm doing in session work is I'm going down and changing the unconscious, changing that unconscious matrix. And that in and of itself has to change the physical world, because as you change what's internal, you also change what's external. Mm-hmm. And that's the real power of metaphor restructuring. It really is. It's tapping into the structures of creation. And that's what It's Only a Metaphor goes into. It's quite some depth. And I draw examples from my own life, how some of my own reversals have appeared in my world around me. So, yeah.
Can you give us an example or one or two examples?
Oh, well, I can remember one off the top of my head. This is a funny one. I was dating a woman at the time, and I did her reversals, and we were talking, you know, we were just sort of chatting back and forth. Anyway, we did reversals. She had reversals. I said, I will shift the bedroom. Anyway, 2 weeks later, I went around to her house. She changed her whole bedroom around, moved it all around, but completely reorganized it. And a week after that, she had a new boyfriend. So she literally did shift the bedroom. I will shift the bedroom is what the reversal was. And
oh my gosh.
And so the bedroom was shift, and then I was out of the window.
Oh no.
And very sad. Very sad. What can I say? I could just got so many examples. Right now I'm drawing a blank. Anyway, that's one I can think of.
You know what? I'm one that came to my mind. Now I didn't have I didn't have my reverse speech analyzed to corroborate this, but corroborate. People's houses, I think, symbolize their consciousness.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
And I think some of my inner thoughts, maybe my inner speech, my speech reversals, were about large houses. And so I look at the house where I am now, and it's just, it's large. It's on three levels.
Yeah, it's a big house.
How significant is that? Yeah, you know, the conscious, unconscious.
Yes, that's right.
And part of it is underground.
Uh-huh.
It's built into the hillside. And part of it, like 1,000 square feet of it, is just storage, stuff that I've collected throughout my life.
Wow.
So this house is kind of like my conscience,
yeah,
you know, my mind, consciousness. I wanted to ask you, at one time, you know, you were talking about your work with people, and you were offering a 15-minute taster session for people.
Yep.
Who want to try out reverse speech, but they're not, you know, ready to commit to full session work just yet.
Yes,
do you still do that?
Oh, yes, I still do that. I still get some people to take me up on that. Yes, it's a nice little inexpensive way to get, you know, to get a taste whether it's going to work for you or not.
Yeah, I've been thinking of doing that myself.
Oh, have you really? All right.
Yes, I may do that. And I there was a book club that invited me to speak about The Insiders. So they all read The Insiders.
Oh.
And I went to talk to them, and I sent them the link to the 15-minute session, you know, if they wanted to try out reverse speech. I don't know if they did or not, but so if you're still offering it, you know, I can maybe post that on my author page on Facebook.
Well, yes, we are. And what I should do is sign you up. I'm just establishing an affiliate program right now, which will be ready to release mid-June. And the website's being all encoded for it now. I won't go into commissions over the air because we still have got to finalize it all down. But what you will get is an affiliate link and put on your website. And then anyone who signs up for that, you get a commission. Okay.
I'm excited about that.
Yeah. Yes. Well, I've decided, look, I've used marketing people over the years, and some have been good and some have been bad, but mostly they've all fallen through in the long run. Their prices are incredibly high, and I figured, let's just use reverse speech community itself to market and motivate reverse speech.
Excellent idea.
Yeah. So anyway, when I'm ready to release that, folks, so you know it's in the works. When we're ready to release it, we'll announce it on the show.
Excellent. Oh, good. Okay, I'm looking forward to that.
Yeah.
I wanted to also ask you before our time is up about the documentary. Update on that?
Well, we have a very exciting weekend this weekend in the documentary. Of course, I'm lecturing in Ashland on Saturday night, the 27th of May. If you would like to come along, we'd love to see you at lecturing in the Ashland Public Library. The documentary crew will be there filming, actually not so much filming the lecture, but filming people's reactions to the lecture, reactions to reverse speech. We got a lot of reverse speech people coming, so they can get a chance to tell their story. And we're going to be interviewing Jeff Rentz, who mm-hmm. runs the sightings on the radio, the Rentz.com, and Jeff Toth, who's my right hand man, who's been with me for 20 years now. So,
my goodness.
So that's all happening this weekend. So that's very exciting. So, the documentary, they want to have it out by 2018 for film festivals in 2018. Most of the filming has been done. There's still a few little interviews I have to get, and I won't go and do it on the air which ones they are. I don't want to give too much away. However, there is, can go to a documentary website now and see a little 2-minute taster of the documentary.
Yes, I already saw that.
Yeah.
That's on Facebook, right?
That's on Facebook, yeah. It's also got a website, voicesfromtheunconscious.com. That's voicesfromtheunconscious.com.
Uh-huh. And so on Facebook, it's also called Voices from the Unconscious?
Yes, it is. Facebook page is Voices from the Unconscious. Yeah.
Well, I'm eager to see the final product because, as you know, I was interviewed.
Yes, you were indeed.
They came here. I was really excited. Producers and a film crew came, and I worried about my hair, and I fretted about this, and I fretted about that, and maybe I'll have one of those sessions with you on how to get over fretting so much.
Yeah, maybe so. Yeah, yeah.
I tend to be a little anxious sometimes when I'm on video, you know.
Well, it can be a little bit nerve-wracking, can't it? Yeah.
But I think it went well, and they were asking me, you know, about the early days of reverse speech and what I thought of you. They wanted to know about that. And they wanted to know in just a few words. And I thought, are you kidding me? A few words to describe David and his work. That would be quite a challenge. But I talked about how dedicated you were and creative and how you persevered against all odds, you know. And they really are quite a pioneer, you know, and sometimes pioneers get, never mind. Well, they get arrows in the back.
Yeah, they do. I've got a few of those. Got a few scars in my back over the years.
Pioneers here in the United States, you know, in the early days, they took a few arrows. And so sometimes pioneers, they get kind of beaten up, you know, and they just keep on keeping on. And I think that's what you've done. And look what you've created. My goodness.
Well, I certainly have not let it go. I mean, to me, when I first discovered it, it was like, how can anyone not dedicate their life to this? It's an incredible technology, you know. I mean, gee whiz, it's direct access to the spirit that philosophers have been looking for millennia. And here we are. We've found it.
Yeah, and how was it that no one else found it before you?
I know. I ask myself that question all the time. The fundamentalists had it for at least 10 years before I did, and they never went past satanic messages.
Yes, I know. Wow. Well, yeah, I'm working on – I have a sequel to The Insiders in mind.
Oh, do you indeed?
I do. But I don't have a plot. That's the problem. I have so much trouble with plots. But what I want to do is look at – I want to deal with the animal rights.
Okay.
And so, of course, you'll have the, quote, good guys and the, quote, bad guys.
Right.
You know, the ones that are doing everything they can. They're activists for animal rights. And sometimes they get, you know, pretty extreme. And then, of course, you've got the, quote, bad guys.
Right.
I put it in quotes.
Right.
What I'm going to be doing, if I get around to it, like I mentioned, I have 6 other books ready to be edited. But I want to look at the idea of hunting and vegetarianism, and I want to look at nuances and shades and everything, because one thing I've learned is that very little is black and white in life.
Yeah, I know. Oh, well, good. Listen, Kathleen, we've got about 45 seconds left. Get out your contact information. How can people get your book, The Insiders?
Go to Amazon.com. Uh-huh. I am Kathleen L. Hawkins. L as in Louise. And it's called The Insiders, and they can get either a print copy or an ebook.
Right. Right.
And they probably know that if you click on the Look Inside feature on Amazon, you can read the first chapter or two for free.
Yeah, there you go. Amazon.com, Kathleen L. Hawkins, who has been in the reverse speech community now since 1989. Mm. You're one of the old timers. All right, Kathleen, we have to go. Thank you very much. And
thank you, David.
We'll see you all next week, everyone. Bye-bye.
Bye.
I'd like to invite you to take a look at some of the most important products in the realm of health and hygiene I've ever seen, all from Trioxy. As many of you know, ozone oxygen is highly effective for many different uses in the home or office place, from purifying the air you breathe to the water you drink. In fact, the city of Los Angeles, among others, uses ozone to purify the drinking water for millions. Uses of ozonated water produced by the Trioxy Pure include washing your hands, disinfecting cuts and infections, brushing your teeth, and even washing and sanitizing fruits and vegetables in the kitchen. Meanwhile, the Trioxy Re-Ion ozone negative ion generator will clean your indoor air of pollen, smoke, odors, mold, bacteria, and viruses, and more, and will put extra oxygen into your bloodstream and clean your body just by you being there. I hope you'll drop by and visit GoHealthyNext.com and take a look. The prices are more than affordable, and the results are priceless. That's GoHealthyNext.com.
Known worldwide as the most consistently fascinating, informative, and unique program on radio, the Jeff Rentz program can be yours to listen to anytime, anywhere, whenever you want to hear it. For pennies a day, our subscribers can download any of Jeff's thousands of programs featuring a treasury of newsmakers, researchers, eyewitnesses, and incredible subjects, all in MP3, commercial-free, crystal-clear 56-bit digital sound, and take these often unforgettable programs with them wherever they go. As a subscriber, you can also listen live at airtime, online, anywhere in the world, or browse through our archives of over 6,000 hours of legendary broadcasts. Subscribe now by taking the link at the top of Rentz.com and enrich your mind with the most unique panorama of vital information and the best independent, honest journalism in radio. Look for the Subscribe Now link on Rentz.com and give yourself the knowledge you need for these unprecedented times.